Today on Wings.
Do you think that anybody who was up there would be very much interested in whether his peasants were starving? It was just a nuisance.
Marie Antoinette was born in Austria and married off at age 14 to the heir to the throne of France. When crop failures led to famine, her name was used to rouse hatred for the aristocrats' regime. In 1793, she was beheaded. Today she is still infamous in connection with a single phrase, "Let them eat cake." Producer Mindy Rann investigates Marie Antoinette's favorite cake.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
One of my hobbies and part of my work is the history of food, and we're going to cook a real Kugelhupf, the way Marie Antoinette, who was of Austrian extraction, might have eaten.
Journalist and food historian Lisette Krauth kindly invited me to her old farmhouse kitchen on a beautiful summer's day to bake.
First, there are raisins in this Kugelhupf, and I'm going to measure them, and then I'm going to soak them in kirsch.
According to European Peasant Cookery by Elizabeth Luard, this cake was a particular favorite of the unfortunate Queen Marie Antoinette of France, casualty of the guillotine and daughter of Francis I and Marie Theresa of Austria. It was Marie Antoinette's reported suggestion that the peasantry should eat her preferred cake as a solution to the bread famine that lit the torch for the French Revolution. Marie Antoinette's Kugelhupf might thus be held indirectly responsible for the emancipation of most of Europe's peasantry. I heard a story that when she said, "Let them eat cake," it was showing her ignorance of ingredients of things, and she assumed that if they couldn't make bread, then they could make this cake.
It's an absolutely interesting story, probably quite true, and all these ladies living in court so far from real life, they thought if there wasn't bread, well, then you eat cake. I mean, there's something. They couldn't imagine that there was nothing.
Why are you soaking the raisins in kirsch?
That's because the recipe tells me to. Kirsch also gives them a nice tangy taste. And then it makes them plump, and if you go for the Alsatian recipe, kirsch is quite surely in it. It's where it comes from. So I'm going to measure all the things I need so that I can work speedily and handle things one after another.
Lisette is followed faithfully around by her spaniel Sandy and her kitten Boris.
Whenever I'm busy with food, they think there's something for them in it. He's only 9 weeks old. He eats about four times a day.
Right before everything started to go wrong, what was the food of the day?
The usual food of the day for the farmers would be their own crops. They would have a little meat, mostly pork. They would have the beans and they would have grains to make a potage, large meal soups. And they would be reasonably well off. In the villages and in the towns, it would be a little bit more difficult because you had to buy food. You were dependent on the success of the crops and what the farmers could bring to the cities. You would have to have money to be able to buy in the market, and then you would have fish, and you would have meat and poultry, and you would have greens and vegetables, and you could bake your own bread, or you could go to the baker and have your own bread and pies baked, or you could buy them there. Not very interesting food, but good staple food. Now, of course, the higher you get in social circles, food plays a different role, because then you have food to show off. You have to have large banquets, if you're a king, to show that you can afford to present all this food. And that's where you get this large difference between food that you need to survive and food that is there to impress other people. You want this lavish dinner to impress people that you are able to serve at one meal 24 different courses. Five soups, side dishes, large roasts. Large roast, again, implied that you had lots of money for fuel.
Could people eat all of this stuff, or were they enormously corpulent as a result of this?
A combination of that. You would eat what was in front of you. So you wouldn't eat all the five soups, but you would eat one or two. The higher you were in the table, the closer to the king, the more variety you had. But at low end of the table, below the salt, actually, you wouldn't have all this much choice. And again, such a meal could last all day. Parties lasted for 3 days. This is a very standard recipe, very easy to make, actually. It's only thing which you need is a mold and an oven. And that means that it is probably a recipe which is a modernization of an ancient recipe dating from, say, the 18th century. But you had to have some money to make this, because it's got luxury items in it, lots of sugar, raisins and nuts. So the bourgeois would have it, but the poor farmers might not get the almonds so easily.
So there's very little butter and a lot of flour and eggs.
Yes. Yeah, there's lots of milk in it, though. But it's more cake-like than it's a bread. They can use it like bread in the morning. You see, in Germany, quite often at breakfast, they serve this kind of bread.
Still. I did hear that this was Marie Antoinette's favorite thing to eat from her childhood. Would that sound about right?
Yes. If she's from Austria, from Vienna, Kugelhupf is very hot there, yes.
You can still get Kugelhupf in Vienna.
Yes, every baker would have one. We always think that there are big ruptures in eating, but it's not. There's continuity. Of course, when there is a war or famine going on, then you have a problem. But usually people don't change that much. We still like ertessoep, right? Pea soup in the Netherlands. It hasn't changed very much, the recipe. Of course, the pea was introduced late. It's not indigenous here, but you can see bean soup, all the things that you can cook in one pot, needs little fuel, can stand for hours before it's ready. You can make it in the morning, throw in all the leftovers you have, and you have a kind of pea soup in the evening. It's for poor people. If you have a roast, you need a big fire, so you need lots of very good quality wood and dry wood. That means you need it in ancient times to have a lot of money to buy that. I'm dissolving a bit of the sugar in the milk, and when that's tepid, so the sugar is solved, but you shouldn't bring it to cook, then I'm going to dissolve the yeast in it. And then I'm going to make the dough. One of the things is, not everybody had an oven at home, so you could make this at home and bring it to the baker, or you bought it from the baker. I'm going to beat it a little bit to speed up the process and get an even... This is going quite well, I guess. Look, it's ready. It's got a bit of grayish tint now, but it's okay. Now we're going to make the dough. We will put in the sugar. All the sugar, the rest of the sugar, I put now with the flour, and I spoon it through the flour and the salt. So it's a bit of a mixture. The fact was that there was a plague among the cattle, so there was no more meat. And if there was meat, it was not going to the people who needed it, but to those that were stuffing their faces already. And there was also a plague among the cereals. There was ergot. And there wasn't, anyhow, not enough to feed all the people in the cities and in the towns, in the villages. The farmers just hadn't the means to provide enough food for all the people who were not growing their own crops. So there simply was not enough food to eat. And if there was food, it was going to the classes that didn't work on the country, but were extracting everything out of this poor farmers that couldn't do anything. This lasts for years. Now I'm going to put in the mixture of the milk and the yeast, and I'm going to spoon it through the dough. I'm doing this still with a wooden spoon. I'm going to change to the mixer as soon as the dough is wet enough, and then I will knead it electrically, which of course they didn't have in the time, but it helps. I mean, we don't have the kitchen staff they used to have in that time. Uh, There were years that alone in the Netherlands, in the cities, 50,000 people died because they didn't have anything to eat. That's a large amount of people for that time.
And what about in France? Do you have any idea of how many people were falling in France from lack of food?
Yeah, about two-thirds of villages would be wiped out because of the famine.
And this happened over years?
Yes, this happened over years.
Why was it called the bread famine?
Well, because there was no grain. Simply, that's so there was no bread. And bread was then the staple food of the people. Not only for bread, but you made also bread soups, or you made from cereals, you made a kind of porridge. And if there wasn't any grain, if there were no cereals, no wheat, you could make bread, you could make porridge, and then there would be no food at all. You had to eat grass. Well, you can't eat grass. We can't eat grass. So much for the yeast. Now, what's next? Now we're going to add the eggs.
Oh, I can hear your chickens.
Yes. They're fairly old ladies by now, because I think one of them is, or two of them are already 10 years old, and the rest 9 or 7 years old. Usually at farms, they don't grow to old age. As soon as they stop laying eggs, they're usually being transferred to the kitchen, right? And here they just live under an old age pensioner's home. And sometimes 7 of them produce one egg. If people are hungry, they've got nothing to lose. And if then they still have to yield the little crops they have to feed the nobility, then you'll get a lot of unsatisfied and unhappy and angry people. And if they then see that the partying is going on, and they don't get any food at all, you have a lot of discontentment. So, you see, it's already starting to get a bit more like a real dough. Okay, now for the butter. This we do with our hands, so that you get a nice feeling of what a dough is going to be like.
Do you like the feeling of that in your hand?
Oh, absolutely. One of the fun things in the kitchen is doing things with your hands, isn't it?
Was the king and the court still partying like nothing was going on outside the walls?
Yeah, sure. Because they were not connected to the outside world. They were living in this separate world of their own. If you even see, after they have been taken prisoner, what their food was in the Bastille when they were in prison, they still had a lavish meal every day, 3 times a day. And we cannot understand that. If you put people in prison, we think they should have sober food, but not the king and the queen, of course. If you were just a poor prisoner, you would have got a kind of watery soup, but mostly you would be dependent on what your family would bring you.
And what did the king and dear little Marie, who started all of this, what was sweet little Marie eating in prison?
They would have a roast every day, and they would have chicken, also prepared dishes. They would have pies. They would have their bread. They would have soups, and they would have sweets, and they would have fruit. Nobody would have very much fruit if you were very poor. And they all had the Malmsey wines. They would have a carafe of clean water. They would not have anything actually as lavish as they were accustomed to, probably, but not bad at all. So, you see, it's getting quite sticky.
But this is what kitchen staff would have to do. They'd have to work this then for a good quarter of an hour,
right,
of serious kneading, wouldn't they?
Yes. I mean, that's why there were so many people in the kitchen working. You had girls that just did this, or girls that just made the bread, or yeah, people had a specialized function in the kitchen. The scullery maid would do this, and so much easier to buy it at the baker's. A lot of the cooks of those noble families, of course, were out on the street. Oops. And these are the hooks for dough. So now we're going to put in some more butter, and then I'm going to knead it with the squiggly bits. Their employers had either fled to England or were decapitated or on the point of being decapitated. So a lot of the cooks were on the street as well. And so they had to find new employment. They started to cook for the new aristocracy, of course, the Napoleon regime, and they started restaurants and catering services. And some went to England and taught the English to enjoy food.
Well, I was just noticing this is much more like a bread dough than it is a cake.
Yes, it's a mixture between a cake and bread.
How could they have been so stupid to think that if you couldn't get the materials for bread, that you could get them for cake?
Well, she never saw the beginning of the product, she only saw the result. So she thought, well, if you haven't got the one thing, you always have the other thing. Because you only have to ask, don't you, when you're with an ability.
What does this let them eat cake line mean to the world, do you think?
Well, first of all, it's a wonderful good story, right? And everybody loves a good story. And this difference between the poor people who couldn't afford bread, who were hungry, who couldn't feed their children, their families, who were dying in the streets and in the fields, and then that some lady out of reach would say, well, you know, if there's no bread, let them eat cake, which even is ridiculous because cake is much richer food than bread. It's really far out. You see, now it's much more like real dough. It's got much more, it's more coherent than it was before. Now I'm going to plunge my hands in a bit of flour and I'm going to make a ball of it. And then it's going to be covered. Looks good, right? Springy. And I'm going to cover it with a clean towel and put it away in a warm place for an hour. And in between that time it should double its volume.
Okay, we're back in the kitchen now. Mm-hmm. What's this?
These are the raisins which have been swimming in the kir. Smell this. They're nice, fat and plump.
Oh, it smells gorgeous.
So what I'm going to do now is dry them off a little bit. They can dry off in the sieve a little bit, and then we'll go and see about the dough. Yeah, it's absolutely Gugelhopf. I might export it to Vienna, don't you think?
Absolutely. You could start a bakery tomorrow, I'm sure. Shall I hold the bowl for you?
Yes, please. Because it's quite a lot, isn't it? We're going to put the dough away for a while, and then I'm going to butter the mold.
In terms of food, what happened after Marie lost her head?
Actually, the famine, especially here in the Netherlands, got worse because we were cut off from our colonies. The Dutch East and West Indian companies couldn't trade anymore. We were either blocked by the British or by the French or by both. So we did not have any riches anymore. So no food here, and the food that was there would go to the army. And the guys that could work on the land, the farmhands, were joining the army or recruited. So much more poverty. Well, that's a lot of butter. I think that you see a kind of restructuring of the way people are fed. You see a change in what they are going to eat. We couldn't have cane sugar anymore because that came from the Indies. So we're changing to beet sugar. So this industrialization of the sugar crops. Here you see a move towards the potato, which was not very popular. It was actually seen as food that might possibly be beneficial to the animals, to the cattle, but not for human consumption. And you see that it's becoming quite popular in the end. But there was this Frenchman, Monsieur Parmentier, who tried to make the potato popular already in the during the regime of Louis XVI. Well, what he did at the end was have a field with a potato crop on it, surrounded by guards, and make it very special. And so, don't steal this. Of course, people started to find their way into the crops and discover that it was really good food. But you see a lot of resistance against this crop. And now we're putting almonds in all these little bits. If you're in a very luxury mood, you could grind some almonds and put them through the dough. This is the kind of Gugelhopf if she had meant for the poor man to eat. He wouldn't have seen it before in his life. So now I'm going to put the dough on the almonds. And then we're going to have to let it rise a little bit more. Should be actually about till the rim of the mold. Most of the books don't mention weights and quantities. You just get the ingredients. And everybody knew. Cookery books were then for cooks who knew how to do things. And the recipes would be about variations.
But so we can't give an original recipe that anybody's going to be able to follow, can we?
No, we have to have the metric version. So that's also what the revolution did for us. Because in the early, about 1806, there was in the Netherlands the first cookery book for burghers, for civilians. So it's not for the cooks of the nobility or the rich families, no. It's for the burghers. To have people to work, you need to feed them. And so you see that in the countryside, the people in power then start feeding up the lower classes. You could get subsidized rye in the province. There were doctors and there were learned people, scientists, who said, no, you have to give the farmers the cereals to sow and the grains to sow, and you have to give them stock. And so you see a kind of scientific involvement, a medical involvement in feeding up the people. So you have labor, so you have soldiers. So you see a change in philosophy in that people really do need to eat in order to be able to work. Also another change, in there are reverends in the Netherlands who explain that if people are poor, it's not exactly their fault, but it's the fault of the state, because the state should provide them with jobs to work. They say then that they see three times as much people poor that should be poor, and that really cannot help it. That this is not a punishment of God, but it is a question that the state doesn't organize things well. Well, the oven is just in the right temperature, and I put it on the rack in the middle of the oven for 40 minutes. Kugelhopf. For one large Kugelhopf, you need 2.5 deciliter milk, so a quarter of a liter milk, 100 gram caster sugar. If you use fresh yeast, 25 gram, and otherwise one package of dry. 750 gram flour, a little bit of salt, 3 eggs, 150 gram soft butter, and 50 gram of raisins, and you soak them in 3 spoonfuls of kirsch. 25 gram of blanked almonds, not halved, not in pieces, just all of them. And then just for the decoration, you need some powdered sugar. So easy. The first step is that you put the milk into a cooking pan, a saucepan, with about 25 gram of the sugar. And then you solve it, you heat it slightly, and then you solve the yeast in it. In the meantime, you have to put it off the fire, right? Then you put the flour and the rest of the sugar and the salt in a large bowl, and you add the yeast milk to it, and you stir it through with a spoon. Use a wooden spoon. Then you add the eggs, and you're still kneading with a wooden spoon. And one by one, you add those 3 eggs. And stir them through. And then put in the butter and work it through and knead with the hands. Okay, at the end you form a ball of it and you put a little bit of dry flour on it. You put it back in the bowl and you cover it with a clean towel and you leave it for an hour to it's about to double its size. Then, we're going back to raisins. Don't forget the raisins we have put away with Kirschwasser. You put the raisins through a sieve and you dry them off a little bit and then you work them into the dough. In the meantime, you have put on the oven on 180 degrees Celsius, that is. And you butter the mold with a little bit of butter and you place the almonds in the little slots on top. And then you fill the mold with the dough. You cover it again with a towel, the same, will still be clean enough. And then you set it away until the dough has risen to the rim of the mold. Now, this will take about half an hour, 20 minutes. Then you put it for 40 minutes in the oven. Now, you really know when it's ready when you knock your fingers on the Kugelhopf and it sounds a bit hollow.
Like a bread.
Like bread, right. Not like cake. Well, if it's dry, then you get it out, you turn it around on a rack and you let it cool for 15 minutes and then you do the powdered sugar down and then it's ready. Do you think that anybody who was up there and had to lose everything would be very much interested in whether his peasants were starving? Even if they had milked them of every penny, they would not feel responsible because they were chosen by God to govern the country, right?
I'm beginning to understand why people were losing their heads.
Plagues have been of all times, but when you get things on top and the government would help you, whether it's the church, which was still very powerful then in France, or local feudal lord, he won't help you, he won't support you. Well, then, of course, if those people got together and got some political support, yeah, you have a revolution on your hands.
The smell is wonderful.
Now, look.
Oh, when it's risen, it's beautiful.
Is it still brown? Look at this, it's very hot. Careful, careful. So, I'm going to put the oven out like this.
And you give it a little knock, do you?
Yes.
Can I give it a little knock? And that's the sound it should make so you know it's done.
Yes.
Right.
This is the oven telling me it's ready. I knew that already. Now we're going to turn it over on a rack. Look, it's a real decoration. First, the powdered sugar.
Ah, a cake bread fit for a queen, really.
Right, absolutely, especially at breakfast.
So, you think if they had been feeding this to the peasants, that they would have chopped her head off?
No, I don't think so. If they had made this all available to all citizens of France and the rest of Europe as well, to throw some other poor countries in, there would be no revolution. Everybody is content on a full, well-filled stomach.
Mmm, it all makes sense. It smells like bread and looks like cake. It's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, even the dog likes it.
The Kugelhopf baker was journalist and food historian Lisette Cruyff, interviewer and producer Mindy Rann, technical support Mark Brower. The Aral Tapestry Let Them Eat Cake first aired in Radio Netherlands EuroQuest series and can be found at radionetherlandsarchives.org. Adaptation for Wings by Frieda Worden. Hear this program again at wingsradio.org or by emailing wings@wings.org. You may also like our news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. There is reason to believe, by the way, that Marie Antoinette never said let them eat cake at all. Writer Antonia Fraser attributes the phrase to another French queen a century earlier. Now Marie Antoinette's reputation is getting a makeover at a gallery called La Conciergerie in Paris. Held in the prison where she was captive, the exhibit is called Marie Antoinette, the Metamorphosis of an Image. It continues through January 26, 2020. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the new book, The Maternal Roots of the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.